Hello, this is Marcia Clenard with the Pantograph, starting with Monday, February 10th, 2020. We're going to begin with an article that's on the front page of Monday's paper. Police: few pot citations issued since legalization. Illinois State University Police Chief Aaron Woodruff has a collection of bongs and other drug paraphernalia seized during investigations over the last year. But today, he and his officers are more likely to find people vaping illegal substances. The new Illinois law allowing adult use of recreational cannabis has not resulted in many changes on campus. Woodruff said the campus sees about 19 arrests a month on drug-related charges, and he hasn't seen any difference since Illinois changed its laws. Normal police have issued 8 citations for cannabis-related ordinance violations by 6 adults and 2 minors. Bloomington police have issued no citations for cannabis-related ordinance violations. No one has been arrested in either city or by the McLean County Sheriff's Office for driving under the influence of cannabis. McLean County residents with minor cannabis convictions may have their records expunged to clear those charges, but State's Attorney Don Knapp said no expungement petitions were filed in January. "We haven't had any issues at this point," said McLean County Sheriff John Sandage, adding that during the first month of legal weed sales, his department did not issue any citations for cannabis-related violations. At this juncture, only 4 weeks in, it's good that it hasn't had much effect yet, said Bloomington Police Chief Dan Doneth. "But we don't have a dispensary here in town or in Normal that is a local supplier for recreational cannabis. I would fully expect in time that we would see more things." The Green Solution, a medical dispensary located at 501 Northtown Road in Normal, has applied for a state permit to open an additional dispensary to sell recreational cannabis. 8 so far in the course of a month. That would be consistent. That would be about what we would expect, said Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner. I wouldn't say it is an alarming trend, not knowing what to expect from the change in the law. I think that was a pretty reasonable number. There wasn't a huge influx of violations, and it wasn't none. In Normal, 3 citations alleged possession of cannabis in a public place. One cited alleged use of cannabis in a public place. 2 more citations alleged furnishing cannabis to a minor, and 2 others alleged unlawful possession of cannabis by a minor. The new Illinois law allows adult residents age 21 or older to possess and consume recreationally up to 30 grams of cannabis flower, 5 grams of concentrates, and/or 50 milligrams of THC-infused edibles and other products. Out of state and other visitors may have half those amounts. Cannabis is still legal under federal law, and the federal is still illegal, excuse me. Cannabis is still illegal under federal law, and the Federal Drug-Free Schools and Communities Act requires schools that receive federal funds, such as ISU, to enforce laws on alcohol and other drugs and have prevention programs. In addition, under the Illinois Smoke-Free Campus Act, ISU became a smoke and tobacco-free campus July 1st, 2015. Woodruff said vaping, even regular tobacco, is prohibited under that law. In general, possession of a small amount of marijuana on campus is treated similar to alcohol, said Woodruff. The offender receives a civil citation, similar to a parking ticket, and can be referred to the Student Conduct and Conflict Resolution Office, he explained. In January, Normal police made 3 arrests for driving under the influence of drugs, but cannabis was not the drug involved, Bleichner said. Among Bloomington's police's 23 driving under the influence arrests in January, Two involved drugs other than cannabis, and one alleged a driver was impaired by a combination of alcohol and drugs other than cannabis, said police spokesman John Furman. During a traffic stop in January, Bloomington police alleged seeing cannabis that was not transported in a sealed, odor-proof, child-resistant container as required by law. The driver was not cited, but police took the cannabis and wrote a report that was forwarded to the state's attorney for review, Furman said. We want to educate the public in regard to the law, but when we do run across people who are in violation, we want to use the totality of circumstances to decide what the appropriate response is, Donna said. Do we write an ordinance violation? Do we arrest somebody? Is it a learning teaching moment because there are some gray areas, added Donath. Smoking in public places in the front porch, is the front porch a public place? Is the backyard a public place? Bloomington police also recovered cannabis after arresting four people in January for other alleged crimes, Furman said. It so happened that they had cannabis, and that was one of their alleged crimes, he said. Bloomington police found cannabis in the vehicles of two people who were arrested in separate incidents for allegedly driving after the driver's licenses were suspended, Furman said. One of the drivers was arrested on additional charges of fleeing and eluding a police officer. More than 30 grams of cannabis were seized after two men were arrested on charges of possessing or manufacturing and selling drugs illegally, said Furman. One of the men was also arrested on charges of resisting an officer and possession of a loaded firearm without a valid firearm owner's identification card. More than 100 grams of cannabis were recovered after officers responded to a domestic violence incident. No charges were filed or arrests made in connection with the cannabis because someone wanted to turn it over to police, Furman said. In December, the Bloomington City Council unanimously approved a $300 fine for a dispensary selling cannabis or anyone furnishing cannabis to minors, a $100 fine or 8 hours of community service for anyone possessing more than 30 grams of cannabis, possessing cannabis under the age of 21, or consuming cannabis in public, and a $150 fine for each cannabis plant that is illegally possessed. The law limits 5 plants for those issued a medical cannabis card. The normal city council set fines at $500 for finding furnishing cannabis to a minor and $350 to $750 for other cannabis-related violations. Juicy, a global cannabis and hemp operator with retail, distribution, cultivation, and processing operations, is buying the green solution. Juicy's request for a special use permit to become Normal's first recreational cannabis retailer was approved by the Normal Zoning Board of Appeals in January, and the Normal City Council signed off on it last week. There are several reasons why Woodruff doesn't expect to see a difference on campus resulting from the new law. The majority of our students living on campus, the more majority of students we deal with, are under 21, he said, which means purchasing or possessing cannabis is still illegal. Another factor is the price of cannabis purchased at dispensaries, which Woodruff said is significantly higher than what is sold on the black market. Knapp, the state's attorney, said he anticipates there will be expungements because we have had a couple private lawyers inform us that they intend to file petitions on behalf of their clients in the near future. Several paths to expungement are available, including the defendant filing their own petition or a notice from the state through the Prisoner Review Board, Governor's Office, or Illinois State Police, Knapp said. Adults who were arrested before June 25th, 2019, for a minor cannabis charge, including possession or delivery of 30 grams or less, and had not been arrested for a violent crime, qualify for automatic expungement if the charges were dismissed, vacated, or acquitted, according to Illinois Legal Aid Online. Those records will be expunged for the next 5 years in groups based on arrest date. The McLean County Public Defender's Office has filed motions to dismiss six cannabis cases that were pending when the new law went into effect January 1st. After an initial review, KNAPP said there is no statutory basis to object to the dismissals, but the cases are still pending. Continuing now with state and local news, West Market Street Plaza gains support. A proposed redevelopment of the West Market Street Plaza will become a reality soon due to strong support from the business and residential community, say two Westside Bloomington leaders behind the project. About 60 people attended a community forum at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church Saturday evening, where the preliminary architectural drawings for the project were unveiled. "We were beyond pleased with the turnout," said Lori Bell, who organized the event along with Arthur Haynes. "We had a great mixture of people. We had people who lived in the neighborhood of West Market Street, people who were on the original West Bloomington Task Force that produced the West Bloomington Neighborhood Plan, people that had businesses in West Bloomington, people who grew up in West Bloomington, and four members from the city council. Everyone is just so excited about a new day for West Market Street." The plaza at the intersection of Market and Howard Streets, known as Fox Plaza West, has been a long-time retail commercial center for West Bloomington. However, all of the properties at the site are in the process of being demolished, and soon the West Market Street Council hopes to take ownership of the property. The next step is to purchase the property and to submit some grant requests to purchase the property, Haynes said. Fundraising efforts are already underway. The West Market Street Council Fund, a nonprofit account, has been opened at Illinois Prairie Community Foundation for donations to fund the project. Once built, the West Market Street Plaza is expected to be home to several retail businesses, at least two community service agencies, and a grocery store. The United States Department of Agriculture has previously identified the West Bloomington area as a food desert because of a lack of a grocery store in the area. The plan, say Haynes and Bell, is to build a not-for-profit grocery store as an anchor in the plaza. "We have yet to decide if the grocery store is going to be owned by a nonprofit in our community, owned and operated by a nonprofit in our community, or just a freestanding store operated by a nonprofit in our community," Haynes said. "But we do know it will be a nonprofit grocery store, but we have to raise all of the capital for the store so we don't have a mortgage and all of that overhead to deal with." Other businesses, including the Silverback Apparel Company and One Stop Print Shop, owned by Haynes, a food caterer, a yoga studio, and a gourmet popcorn shop, have all expressed interest in locating to the plaza. Both admit there's still much work to be done, and the preliminary sketches done by Workbench Architects of Bloomington are just to give an idea of what the proposed property would look like someday. A definite timetable has not been set. There is still a lot to be determined, Bell added. "We wanted to show people that this will be a mixture of retail and community service, and we wanted to let people know how viable it will be to have a grocery store in a food desert. We know it won't be easy. If it was a simple matter of building a grocery store to make money, one of the big grocery stores would already have done it. But we presented research on the different models people have used when opening a grocery store in a food desert, and we feel a nonprofit store is the best solution." The key, she said, is to open debt-free and then rely on sales revenue for operating costs. The community support to get that grocery store and outfit is a big part of the project ahead of us, she said. We'll now move to Sunday's paper, the Pantograph for Sunday, February 9th, with a headline article about Bloomington pensions. Promotion averts payout. Kothe, K-O-T-H-E, won't retire in April, saving city $202,000 fund payment. If newly promoted Bloomington Public Works Director Kevin Kothe had retired by April 30th, the city could have faced its third highest accelerated pension payment to the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. Information obtained by the Pantograph through a Freedom of Information Act request shows the city would have had to make an accelerated payment of $202,190 to the IMRF. That would be based on Kothe's higher end of career salary with $83,606 in unused sick leave and $27,056 in unused vacation pay earned since he was hired in 1988. That estimated accelerated payment, however, would have been $156,204 less than highest ever paid to the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund statewide. When Bloomington Human Rights Director Emily Bell retired in 2014, her earned unused sick leave and vacation time helped boost her starting pension of about $92,000 to $113,000. Her spike caused the highest accelerated payment statewide, $358,394. IMRF spokesman John Krupa confirmed Friday that Bloomington's $358,394 accelerated payment in May 2015 still remains the highest ever paid statewide. On Friday, City Manager Tim Gleason stressed eliminating the estimated accelerated payment for Kothe was not why he promoted the city engineer to public works director effective February 2nd. I didn't know what the accelerated payment amount was until this week, said Gleason. I just knew that it would be a sizable amount. Kevin Kothe had signaled his intention to retire by April 30th. But the reason Kevin Kothe was selected as a public works director is his experience, the leadership qualities that he has. He is well respected within the organization and externally, added the city manager. Kothe said the sick leave reimbursement was an advertised benefit at the time he joined the city some 32 years ago. The city advertised it when I applied for the job, Kothe said. I've only used sick time a few times, usually when someone in the family needed me there for an illness. To discourage the pension spikes, a state law enacted in 2012 required municipalities to make immediate accelerated payments to the IMRF for people whose compensation spiked more than 6%. The city's second highest accelerated pension payment in the amount of $223,830 was for Deputy City Manager Barb Atkins, who retired in the spring of 2014. The city previously eliminated the benefit for employees hired after May 1, 2012, but those hired prior to that date were considered grandfathered employees eligible to receive the benefit. The current structure has allowed sick leave payouts over the final 3 months of employment, which can spike the rate at which pensions are calculated. In some cases, that increase requires the city to make accelerated payments to the IMRF to cover pension costs. The city ended the benefit after April 30, 2020 for classified, that would be non-union, employees, and in labor contracts negotiated with several groups of employees represented by unions. Employees who wanted to retire under the city's current structure had to give notice by October 31, 2019, and retire by April 30, 2020. Cozy had considered retirement and would have been eligible for sick leave buyback. Cozy's continued employment means the city will not have to pay an accelerated payment. After April 30th, employees will still be paid for unused sick leave and vacation days after they retire, but it is not part of their pension calculations, said Bloomington Communication Manager Nora Dukowitz. It just will not be eligible for that end of career payment that has been had a huge impact on the city, added Gleason. Gleason said he expects to begin the next month negotiating that benefit out of labor contracts with the union that represents 36 Water Division employees. In his new role, Cothey will make $144,745, an increase from $120,762. The salary of his former boss, Jim Karch, will move to $115,000 from $144,745. Given his integrity and the respect he has in the community, Kevin probably could have retired, collected his IMRF pension, said Gleason. And I'm sure he would have had, if not already, consulting opportunities and could have made more than as my public works director now. I think that speaks to one of the many reasons why I selected him as public works director. He is very dedicated to the city of Bloomington. Karch, who joined the city in 2000 and became public works director in 2009, will move to a new position of special projects manager. We'll move now to the front page of Saturday's Pantograph, Saturday, February 8th. The front page article, Counting Down. As census nears, local officials stress why it matters. The 2020 census is just around the corner, and everyone counts. That's the message from the U.S. Census Bureau and a cross-section of McLean County residents who are working to make sure everyone is counted. Everyone should fill out a census form because filling it out helps to shape our future through allocation of federal dollars, said Alyssa Cooper, community planner with the McLean County Regional Planning Commission. Cooper is the lead for the McLean County Complete Count Committee, which includes representatives of local governments, rural areas, education, libraries, healthcare, and not-for-profit organizations who are working to convince people of the importance of completing a census form. About $675 billion annually is allocated in the United States using census population numbers. And that goes for road funding, schools, emergency services, healthcare, housing, and veterans affairs, Cooper said. The census is critical for us to receive a fair allocation of federal funding for health services, aging services, and to make sure our roads and infrastructure are sound, agreed Susan Reel, executive director of the East Central Illinois Area Agency on Aging, and a member of the Complete Count Committee. The George Washington Institute for Public Policy estimated that an undercount of Illinoisans in the 2010 census resulted in a loss of $952 in federal funding per person. Census data also is used to determine representation in the U.S. House of Representatives. Our representation in Illinois has decreased after the last several censuses, Cooper said. Illinois has 18 seats in the House of Representatives. Outmigration from Illinois means that the state is expected to lose one congressional seat. If there is an undercount in the census, it exacerbates that issue, Cooper said. We don't want to lose more than one congressional seat, Reel said. We need fair representation in Congress. Census Day is April 1st. In mid-March, the Census Bureau will mail postcards to households inviting people to fill out a census form online, by mail, or by phone. About 14% of McLean County residents have been determined to be hard to count because they are difficult to locate, to interview, or to persuade. Another 14% have limited or no internet access. That's why the Complete Count Committee is working to identify populations at risk of being undercounted. For example, Rail said staff of Piecemeal and Community Care Systems and the Long-Term Care Ombudsman will be discussing with older adults the importance of filling out a census form. Illinois State University is using a multimedia approach to make sure students know about the importance of the census, said Harriet Steinbeck, Assistant Director for Service Learning in the Center for Community Engagement and Service Learning. College students might be skeptical because they don't know what it is and think it is something that their parents take care of, Steinbeck said. We also understand concerns about participating regarding citizenship or immigration status. That is why we are developing the videos and using so many campus communications platforms to help students feel informed. Meanwhile, Illinois Farm Bureau is equipping each of its county farm bureaus with an iPad to assist Farm Bureau members and non-members with getting access to the internet to complete the census. But the census brings up concerns. The Pantograph asked the following questions of Cooper. Is the census for citizens only? It's for anyone in the United States on April 1st. Children who split time between two homes are counted where they live most of the time, or if their time is equally split, where they are living on April 1st. What would you say to undocumented residents who are afraid to share information? Answer it. The data is confidential. The Census Bureau doesn't share information with immigration enforcement agencies such as ICE or law enforcement agencies. Question: what about people concerned with sharing personal information? Answer: the Census Bureau doesn't share personal information. All Census Bureau workers swear a lifetime oath to maintain confidentiality, and any violation comes with a penalty that could include up to 5 years in prison. The data is anonymized and gets used for statistical purposes by planning organizations such as us, and that would be the McLean County Regional Planning Commission. Question: what questions are asked on the census form? How many people are living in the household on April 1st? Whether the residence is owned or rented? The sex, age, and race of each person? Whether any of the people are Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin? And how each person in the household is related to the person filling out the form? The online form and phone line will be available in 13 languages. What about residents of group facilities? For people living in group quarters, the Census Bureau will work with representatives of your building to ensure you're counted, meaning you may not be asked to complete a census form. This includes residents of college dorms, nursing homes, group homes, prisons, homeless shelters, psychiatric facilities, and military barracks. What about college students living in off-campus housing and older adults in independent living? They will be asked to fill out a census form. College students are counted where they live most of the year, and that means where they go to school. And that includes international students. Question: what about snowbirds? Answer: they are counted where they live the majority of the year. So Central Illinois older adults who spend their winters in southern states are counted here. What if people don't fill out a census form? Census takers will be going door to door in May to people who don't respond. So if you don't want someone knocking on your door in May, fill out that form. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for actually Saturday the 8th, Sunday the 9th, and Monday, February 10th.